This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, January 5th, 2012. I'm Caleb Brown. The strategy for the American military from the President and the Pentagon represents a shift in some small ways, such as a reduced emphasis on nuclear weapons. But like so many strategy outlines, the latest one regularly justifies the military's status quo. Benjamin Friedman, Research Fellow in Defense and Homeland Security Studies at the Cato Institute, comments. The President and the Secretary of Defense are trying to explain something about their strategy for defense spending for the next several years, and it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of meat to it, if I understand you correctly. So what is important in what the President and the Secretary of Defense have told us?
The President and the Pentagon have agreed basically to cut the defense budget a bit over the next 10 years. Now, of course, this president won't be president for 10 years and maybe not even for 3 years, but they have this new trajectory for Pentagon spending, which would cut it by about 8% in real terms over that period if the plan stayed in place, which, by the way, is unlikely. So that's a real cut, and it's although it's not very big, it's actually growth in nominal terms, just growth slower than inflation. Even that small cut has a lot of people in the Pentagon and its backers on Capitol Hill and think tanks and so forth quite upset. And one of the charges being leveled against the president, particularly after the Budget Control Act, which in some ways made it easier to cut the defense budget or pressured the president and the Congress to cut the defense budget. One of the charges leveled against the president is, well, this is – it's math driving strategy, ironically, to use Robert Gates' terminology. It's the, you know, the cart is before the horse here. We're just, you know, meeting budgetary targets, and they don't have anything to do with the threats in the world and our strategy. So this strategy document that came out today, I think, covers the president and the Pentagon in that regard. Now they can say, well, no. Our budget, this new plan, is driven by this strategy that we've come up with. And I think this is actually typical. We have this way of talking about politics overall, and particularly defense politics in the United States, where we sort of pretend that it's more scientific than it is, that we have these high-level discussions about policy and what the best path is, leaving aside your ideological preferences, and that these sort of scientific discussions about what policy ought to be are ultimately reflected in the budget and in policy, in the day-to-day policy in the agencies. And I think it's closer to the other way. It's really usually the cart that is before the horse in politics, and that the status quo, what we're doing, has interests behind it. And those interests cause the status quo to continue and the policies to continue, and then we invent rationales for why we're doing what we're doing. So it doesn't flow entirely one way or the other, and I don't want to be too crude about it. But anyway, this is just another example, I think, of where, you know, we're justifying what we're doing more than figuring out what we're doing with a strategy document.
Is there anything in the strategy document that actually fundamentally changes the U.S. military's approach to how we deal with the world?
The significance of the strategy document, this strategy document or any politically, is that it's just something people can point to when they're having fights and when they want to do things in the military, in coming budget fights. So say, well, the strategy says this, so you got to do this, which is consistent with whatever it is they're arguing for. So in this case, this document reflects a change in the way the United States is thinking about ground combat, in that thankfully, you know, we've learned the hard way that prolonged occupations of countries that would prefer not to be occupied by the United States military are probably a bad way to go, certainly as a tool of counterterrorism, and we're not going to do it, or at least we become more shy, less likely to have those sorts of wars. And they say that in this document. The administration, I think, deserves some credit for that. And therefore, they say we can cut the size of the ground forces a little bit. Ground forces, of course, the Army and the Marines do most of the work, certainly not all the work, but most of the work in occupational wars. And this strategy says, well, since we're not going to be occupying countries anymore, let's cut those ground forces a bit. They, of course, grew starting in 2007, 2008 in response to the wars. So this is just sort of a reversal of that. And that's really the biggest shift in this document, which will be, I think, somewhat reflected in the new budget. And then another one is that they're gonna, there's going to be some sort of mild drawdown in Europe, which is going to make way for putting some troops into Asia. What exactly the parameters are of that, they haven't said. This document doesn't say. I don't know if they figured it out yet, but I imagine it'll be something on the order of, you know, instead of having 80,000 troops in Europe, we'll have 50,000, something like that. It's not going to be a withdrawal from Europe, unfortunately, from my perspective. And then they say we're sustaining our presence in the Persian Gulf or Middle East. And if you say, well, what does that mean? I don't think anybody, including the people writing the document, have figured out what the answer is yet. A sort of third minor difference in our approach to defense policy reflected in this document has to do with nuclear weapons. And the strategy has a line that says we might not need all the nuclear weapons we had for our deterrence needs. And what that means, we don't know. And whether or not changes to the triad, which is, of course, the three ways we deliver nuclear weapons, bombers, intercontinental ballistic missiles, and submarines, whether or not there'll be changes in that, we don't know. But I think it's at least a step in the right direction because we have way more nuclear weapons than we need. I mean, you could be the most sort of murderous, bloodthirsty person in the world, and you could say, look, with submarines and ICBMs, we got it all to deter and to fight nuclear war. So why do we need bombers, for example? So the administration's beginning to look at that a little bit. If they wind up doing anything really significant, I'd be surprised, but they at least mention it in this document.
So just to recap, if I understand you correctly, the chief use of this document as a policy tool is to justify a very broad range of policy prescriptions from widely varying people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a group written document, so it's you know, anything that's sort of committee written, even if the president of the United States involved, as he apparently was here, it's not one person's set of ideas. There's all sorts of compromises with the bureaucracies that are baked into it, so it winds up being really sort of empty and unclear language because it's sort of the nature of getting everybody to sign up. But yeah, I think that people ought to pay more attention to the budget. And, you know, budgets tell you a lot more about relative priorities than strategies, which claim that that's what they're doing.
Benjamin Friedman is a research fellow in defense and homeland security studies at the Cato Institute. You can read more of his work at cato.org.